You're listening to Kiss My Aesthetic, your go-to podcast for brag-worthy branding, marketing, and entrepreneurship advice. I'm your host, Michelle Winterstein of MKW Creative Co. Let's dive into the episode. Greetings and welcome back to the Kiss My Aesthetic podcast. This is a much-awaited episode and we have the perfect expert, and even Wilson's excited because now he's barking in the background, to talk all about pricing today. Jazz, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And thank you, Wilson, for being excited because you are matching my excitement level. I am thrilled. I have the sweaty palms. I have the excitement face on. I am ready to talk all things pricing because, to be honest, it is one of those topics where, you know, when someone says, find the thing that you could do forever, like without being paid, ironically, it's talking about pricing for me. So let's dig in.
Let's absolutely do it. For anyone who doesn't know who you are or what you do yet, can you give us the rundown and also tell us where you're calling from? Because we love an accent.
Oh, that's right. Of course, I will have an accent here. Good day. Hi, guys. I am Jazz, your pricing queen and design superwoman. I have been a freelance designer for the last 15 years. And then for the last four of those, I have been teaching freelancers, designers, creatives, anyone who uses their creativity to solve a problem that didn't, solve a problem and create a solution that didn't exist yesterday to help someone tomorrow and doesn't have a boss, is their own boss. That is my definition of a creative freelancer. And I specialize in helping freelancers with their pricing, putting a dollar amount on the ticketed access to their genius.
Perfect. My goodness, there's so much juicy stuff in your mission statement. Clearly, you're a great copywriter or you have a great copywriter somewhere on your team because that was like dialed in. We love to hear it. But you didn't always start as like a pricing expert. So kind of take us back to the beginning, take us to the design past, kind of tell us the whole story of how you got from point A to where we are now.
Excellent. Cue the harps. So if I take you all the way back, I kind of started off, I think my really properly pricing journey where most of us did, in that when we are growing up, when we are learning about the world and how it operates around us, we are learning about pricing from a very, very young age. The influences that we have around us are like our parents, our friends, the way that our parents spend money, the way our grandparents gift us like pocket money, the way that we go to the friend's house that has the fancy pool or has the never-ending plethora of snacks. These are all actually really pivotal moments where pricing starts to influence your life. And so through this growing up, I was, I wouldn't say the most wealthy, but I would not say I was poor off. I was like middle of the stack. We had enough to get by. We had enough to be a little bit more lucky and privileged than some. But then I kind of grew up also in small business. So my dad is a small business owner, has been all of my life. He's a butcher. And so everything to do with looking after a customer and providing a product surrounded me constantly. I actually had a job in the family butcher shop from the age of 8, carrying the grocery bags out to the car or wiping down the windows or handing out like ice blocks or Fritz, which is, I'm not even going to get into that one. That was too confusing. To kids, basically to be part of the family business. And as the years passed, I was constantly exposed to pricing, to the way that people would exchange dollars that they had hard earned for the goods and services and how their decision-making process happened at the counter. Now, I'm going to be showing my age just a little bit here. When I first started in the butcher shop, there was no calculators. There was no tills. We would have a singular piece of paper that we would write everything down. We'd do the scales. We'd write everything down. We'd total it up. And so my math skills had to be dialed in because if I ended up selling a fillet steak for the price of an osso buco, we were going to have problems, massive problems. So I need to have that understanding. And I was greatly influenced by my dad because his whole philosophy is you need to be big enough to serve someone, but small enough to know them. You need to connect with them and provide them the things that they need.
Ooh.
And when it becomes, I know, right? He's a good one. when you are providing a family, not only with the food on their table, but the thing that brings them together, it becomes more about what the exchange of quality for price becomes. Because they can go to a supermarket, but if they go to a butcher shop, they have access to knowledge. They have access to experience. They have access to opinions. I cannot tell you how many times someone would come to the counter and say, I'm cooking this, what's the best cut? Or I'm having 8 people over, how much roast do I need? And those kind of conversations became really pivotal because people weren't asking, and how much is it? They were asking the opinions of the butcher who knew the best, who was the meat professional in the room. And I saw that and spent, 14 years working for my dad in the butcher shop. I helped him run the day-to-day in one of the shops. I would have to count the till at the end of the day. And this was kind of my pivotal experiences that shaped my interest in pricing, but also in business. But there was no way in hell that I was going to become a butcher. I had no interest in that. My creative soul cannot be stuffed into a sausage skin. I am so sorry. It is not going to happen. And trust me, you don't want that anyway. So from there, I kind of got through high school. Of course, I was always the kid that was staying back in the design lab and the design teacher going, I would like to go home now, please. Can you please leave? And was doing all of the extracurricular things and as much as possible, trying to suck all of the goodness out of my education. And then I went on to TAFE, studied graphic design for 3 years, went through that process, got out the other side unscathed and entered into the graphic design world in the only way that I knew how, which was to be employed. Your education as a designer is there to help you get employed, to benefit your employer as much as possible.
Yep.
If there's one thing that I would love anyone to take from these first 7 minutes and 24 seconds of recording is that really your education is there to help set you up to be the best employee possible with the most skills that can be the most profitable for your employer. And when you become a freelancer, you become both of those roles.
Yes.
Your education still matters.
Yes.
But you're not going to be using your design education as much if you are a freelancer. You will be needing some kind of support system from a business perspective to be able to do that. And to be able to get that, for me, the best thing I could do was to get employed and learn from those who are doing it either well or doing it poorly, because they're both just as valuable experiences.
I had the opposite design experience. I actually went to school. I also grew up entrepreneurial. So you telling this whole story is so perfect because I'm like, oh, yes, I get this. Parents are small business owners. When I was growing up, my dad worked a marketing job. My mom was stay-at-home mom. And then when I was like middle school age, they did a 180. My mom's interior design business took off. Dad became stay-at-home dad. And then they did house flips together. So your experience of being in the till, right? Like pulling up people's checks, knowing your fast math. My experience was being a 12-year-old salesperson at an open house with a hot plate of cookies saying, don't you want to buy this house? And going, and my parents would say, hey, go talk to those people walking across the street and tell them to come in and buy this house that we fixed up nice. So those like little micro sales experiences do, and pricing experiences absolutely shape us. So I love that you said that. But when we went to college, I had an interesting experience because I didn't study graphic design. I didn't get any of those skills. Instead, I was fine arts and art history, which was much more theoretical, creative, big thinking, and less practical. So everything practical, I DIY'd. Like YouTube University is what taught me graphic design. But you're so right, because to be a good small business owner, you need to have your area of expertise and you need to know your business basics. Because when you are deficient in either category, you're gonna run into a lot of issues, right? It's this constant teeter-totter. But keep going on your point because you were getting right to some good stuff.
And it definitely is true. I mean, I've seen incredible graphic designers who have no business skills and therefore aren't able to sustain and quote the prices based on that particular job, not them actually existing after that job, which is a really, really big point. And then the other side as well is like designers who are like, yes, I have the business experience, but I don't have the design experience. I'm just doing my best and I'm just slapping a price on to hope that someone pays it. And then they get hired, and then the client gets pissed off and then doesn't actually see them as a long-term investment within their business and important enough to keep in their business. And they just go on this cycle of like, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I don't have enough skills and I will never be there. And so both of them, it needs to be that teeter-totter balance to understand that you can be one or the other, but both is best, 100%.
Both is best until you can find a partner on the other side of your seesaw. So like I'm at a size now where I have Cody, who's a business manager, and I have my mentor, and I have people that can kind of support me from a business standpoint that I didn't have 6 years ago. You know what I mean? I didn't have in the beginning of my career when I started as a 20-year-old and it was just me and I was charging $15 an hour. Like I didn't know how to price anything. And I had asked my parents, they said, charge more than you would babysitting. And I was like, okay. And I was making $12 an hour babysitting. So for my first 6 months of my business as a college student, I was charging $15 an hour. And I thought I was getting away with bloody murder because I never had to leave my house. So it wasn't until I started learning, like you're saying, like finding sources to learn this stuff from, like Jenna Kutcher, Chris Doe, how I built this, like starting to educate myself, read books myself, join Facebook groups to like actually realize what branding actually is. And then also kind of getting a pseudo apprenticeship with a branding agency, which I was like, okay, now I understand. Now it's starting to click in, right? But it seems like a lot of freelancers fall into that trap, and especially women. It pains me to see how much women struggle with pricing themselves. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Well, the funny thing is, it's actually perfect timing because I had just gotten in this kind of graduated my advanced diploma in graphic design, gone into the education, into the employment space. And I was constantly plagued with the quote unquote key roles that women play in the workplace. So I was either a graphic designer, but never ran the print room. I did eventually run the print room. Thank you very much. I was the graphic designer, but I didn't install the signage. I ended up installing the signage. I was finding myself more and more in these places and these businesses where women were the lesser. They were the creative, the fun, the one that would keep the office running. I especially had this in one of my jobs where it was myself, the boss, and his wife. His wife ran an accounting firm out of the same business so that they could, you know, make extra money, or sorry, cover the expense of actually having a space. But he would be there sitting there on his computer looking up Harley parts, and I would be there running the printers. So, you know, those kind of moments started to get me really, really frustrated. And I actually got to a point in, I don't even remember the year, but it was a couple of years into having gone to a few different graphic design places. I worked in a print room. I worked in retirement and aged care marketing. That is depressing, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I worked in a couple of design studios. One of them, I was in charge of the subway pages, which is the like newsletter that goes out to all the subway places. And I found myself in an agency where they literally said to me, this is where designers go when they're sick of being creative and just want to get a paycheck and go home.
Oh, what soul-sucking words, huh?
Yeah. And unfortunately, my wonderful naive brain went, this must be what the design studios are all like. This is must be what I have worked my butt off for high school and 3 years of design school and years of different agencies and different places. This must be what design is like. So I'm out and I left the design industry.
Impressive.
To do the most logical thing that someone would do. I started a musical theater degree.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Okay, wait, sidebar, tell us your favorite musical of all time because I am also a musical fan.
Excellent, excellent. It would be called Dogfight. It's a Pasek and Paul musical. It's a bit more of a modern one. And I love it mainly because I was able to sing a lot of the pieces from it and it just made me really happy because there's this one song called Pretty Funny where the main character sings about the whole experience. If you know what a dogfight is, basically the idea is that these army boys all bring along the ugliest date to the party and whoever brings the ugliest date wins the pot. So she sings about how she thought that she was in love, but really she was being brought because she was the quote unquote ugly one. And it's this song called Pretty Funny. And I could master the single tear at the end.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, it was the best. It was the absolute best. But I actually ended up, you know, jumping out of graphic design and going into musical theater for a year and studied musical theater. And what that did, not only shifting my perspective, but it also brought me from Adelaide to Melbourne. So Adelaide, small, sleepy town, tiny kind of experience. Melbourne, bit bigger. If you think of Melbourne and Sydney as like your LA and your New York, I would say Adelaide is like one of your smaller mid-state capitals. And so it moved me to Melbourne, which I am still in now. And it was one of the best things, but I quit that so fast. 1 year of shoving this sirloin steak of a body into the sausage skin that is a ballet uniform. I don't need that. I'm good. Thank you very much. And the mentality was, you need to prove us wrong because we already think you're crap. That is the example of what musical theater is like a lot of the time in those study days. So hated that, went back into the loving arms of graphic design and picked kind of up where I left off with going to different places and being a graphic designer in different businesses. Now, if you were to pick up my resume from the very start of my graphic design employment until I stopped being employee, I have one of the worst resumes because I never stayed anywhere too long. I had a couple of places that I stayed for like a year, maybe, but a lot of the time I was the filler. I was the one that would come in for a couple of months and then leave. I was a creative recruit. So a lot of these times I was going into businesses where I needed to act fast, to think on my feet, to look for problems to solve, the ones that were causing the most problems and the most shift, and actually get in there and solve the problems. My last employed studio was the epitome of a toxic male workplace.
Yuck.
And it kind of propelled me with a bit of a soft cushion of a year part-time for just a little known brand named Rolex, doing all of their graphic design work. And then after that, popping out the other end and starting my freelance design process. And that was about 7 or 8 years ago.
You're like a cat with nine lives. My goodness.
Yeah. It's the only way I'll be a cat. I definitely have. Well, I started really young. Like I started straight out of high school into 3 years of design school. Then a couple of, I would say 5 or 6 years as an employee. Then started my freelance side of things. And I just needed to start and keep going. And so when I got about 4 years into being a freelancer, I started to have people land in my inbox and say, hey, I don't know how to price this. Have you ever done this before? And I found myself surprised with how much I knew, surprised with how much experience that I had accumulated over those different experiences of different businesses and different ways of running a creative process or a creative studio, that I found myself finding confidence in being able to help them. And that just grew and grew and grew. And I remember sitting there having this conversation with the wall, because freelancing is full of friends. Having this conversation with the wall going, can this be a thing? Can you claim this? I mean, Lauren Holm claimed that she was the lettering queen. Dominique Fallard has claimed that she's the typism queen. Could I claim the pricing queen? Could I do that? And I found someone else was pricing queen as well. And I went, okay, she's the pricing queen. Why don't I go back to my roots and remember that you need to be big enough to serve someone, but small enough to know them? Why don't I be your pricing queen? Why don't I be the one that is made for you, for every freelancer who needed someone on their shoulder to say, hey, have you charged enough today to last tomorrow? Have you charged enough now to keep going? Have you charged enough for this job to be happy to do it? And that's what it ended up becoming.
True. You got some good zinger mantras in there. And I think a lot of people are going to relate to kind of what you just said of feeling like they don't have someone in their back pocket or sitting on their shoulder that can help guide them. So I kind of want to do with you kind of like myth or fact, which would be fun to see you debunk some things, because as I've been with people in the bingo group that has been part of like a mastermind extension of the bingo card that went viral this year, I'm noticing that in their one-on-one sessions, so many of them struggle with pricing. And so many of them say, I can't get this client because, you know, at the end of the day, they only paid me $800. And I'm like, you gotta know your numbers. So myth or fact, you have to know what it costs to run your business on a day-to-day kind of way.
The biggest fact ever.
Biggest fact, right?
Biggest fact ever. You need to know your numbers, because if you don't have an understanding of your numbers, if you don't know the financial and emotional cost of your time before you offer that to your clients, their best or most interest is to keep their costs down, just in the same way that you want to keep your costs down. When you purchase something, there's nothing wrong with a client wanting to not spend a lot, but you need to not over-deliver. You can either undercharge or over-deliver. You pick one. That's it.
That's such a good point. And I would always rather be in the over-deliver camp than undercharge, first of all. But that's a really hard lesson to learn, especially as a young person, especially new in business, because the tendency is to get kind of imposter syndrome, right? Is to look at everybody else, to be overwhelmed by what everyone else is doing, and build your pricing based on other people in the market. Good move or not a good move?
Your pricing can and is allowed to be influenced by those around you. It actually does pay. See that we did there? It does pay to take in what others are doing around you, but don't let it dictate exactly what you should be doing or exactly what you are offering, because your experiences, your way of thinking, the way you solve problems, that is a value base that cannot be replicated. I might be able to do something in 5 hours and you might be able to do something in 3. Does that mean that you're 2/3? Does that mean that you're 40% less valuable than me?
You picked a hard fraction, but we get the
net. I did. This is what happens when you grab a number out of the butt. They stink. But a lot of the time when we are comparing ourselves to others, we need to remember that it's not necessarily about the time that it takes. It's about the impact it makes, and it's about how you solve the problem specifically for that client. The perfect example is that when you're in design school and you're given a brief, multiple different options come out of that. If you've got a class of 10, I can guarantee you that all 10, you will have very low likelihood that they are carbon copies of each other. And that's because we bring our experiences into how we solve problems. And that's really important. However, understanding what the market is and what other people are doing is worth considering, but not dictating what you do.
Also, such a valid point. We need to have understanding of the landscape to help guide us, but we can't. One of my biggest pet peeves, and this happens a lot in the coaching industry, is people listing their course or listing their program as $999.99 because their competitor did.
Yep, that's fair.
And then they sell zero. And they're like, well, my course, charge my value, charge your worth. Everyone says charge your worth. This is $1,000 value, but you've never done it before. So it's that weird kind of like pulley system, right? The switchboard of like, what's the perfect combination? And I've always operated from the place of, and we can myth or fact this, that when someone hires you to do something that you don't have experience doing, it is a risk for them to hire you.
Absolutely. 100%. If we're operating in a space, and this is where I often will say, if you're not sure about what to price, what can you do to gain confidence and alleviate that questioning? Is it to do a test? Not so that they can make money off of it, but so that you can actually know what's coming up, know how to solve the problem, know where the knowledge gap is that's causing the risk. If you can lower the risk, you can increase the rate. That's where you can actually justify, this is why I charge this much. What are you doing to be able to, when we put a price on something or put a price on solving a problem, we're telling them we can solve it for that price. That's what it is. So we need to be able to show that we can actually do it, not only to the client, but to ourselves as well.
And to be transparent when it's something new. Like, this is the first time I've ever offered a mastermind. It's not priced at the top of the market. I think I am going to over deliver. So what was a fair price point to be like, I know that this isn't fully fleshed out. And every month I talk to these guys. I'm like, guys, my first time doing it too. But that's why we're here, is we're learning from each other. And I'm learning what you need. And I'm learning what I can provide. And I'm learning this time thing. And that's why it's priced the lower end of the spectrum, because it is not fleshed out. But I'm a big fan of learn as you go. I'm also a big fan of paying attention to the little markers that tell you it's time to raise your prices.
Yes.
It's more elusive the more you get into business, and they get more obvious the more you get into business. But for me, the first indicator is always the volume of people that filled out the contact form. If we are getting so many people that want to work with us because they see the pricing and that's attainable for them, we got to raise our pricing. We are in too high demand. We have too little supply. So first way to fix that is everything's going up. Agree or disagree?
Agree. 100% agree. You know what? You're giving a lot of good points that I completely wholeheartedly agree with. I actually did a blog, way back when I first started talking about pricing, of like, when everyone wants a slice, it's time to up the price. When we have enough people banging down our door, it's indicating two things. One, we're wanted. We're needed. We are required. It means that we're onto a good thing. The other part is that we are actually doing something that's really, really risky, in that we're not charging enough.
Mm-hmm.
And when we don't charge enough, two things happen. One, we don't have the capacity or capability to do more without putting the price up. And two, we're attracting cheap clients. Our price is the thing that's attracting the client. And when we talk about client values, do they value the problem being solved? Do they value it being done fast? Do they value the quality? Do they value the trust or the communication? Or do they value the price? And if they only value the price over all the rest of those, then they are not the client you want, which is a very, very, very difficult lesson to learn and relearn multiple times through your freelance career. And when that happens, when you have clients that waste your time, that do the things that break your boundaries or impact your mental health, you need to increase those prices, but then also learn from those situations of what boundaries do I need to put in or strengthen? What non-negotiables do I need to give the flick to clients around? Like, if you're finding that you're attracting clients that are giving you the stuff that you don't want to do, they're going to keep doing it unless you tell them not to. It's, you know, the little boy on the school playground pulling your pigtails. They're not going to change their behavior if you keep letting it happen.
Exactly.
And you can either fix it or flick it. You can either help them be a better client so that you can work together, or if it is not worth it,
Cut them loose. Yep.
Let them go, because they will either discover that they were painful from someone else, or they will remember what kind of experience they had with you, come back later when they've been let down and disappointed by someone who didn't have your guts to be able to say, hey, this is not okay. And at that point, you will have a higher price tag, which justifies the way that they have worked before, but you will need to reset those boundaries, reset those prices, and reset what you are available for and what your ticket price to your genius actually gives them access to, because not all of them need your top level experience.
Absolutely. Oh, the timing of this is perfect, because internally we call this the pain in the ass tax.
Oh yeah, PETA.
And we also call this expensive lessons. So this just happened for our team. We had a project. We were not communicating well with the client. The client wanted to continue services with us. We said no, because of the way that the project was going. This is not aligned. Communication standards were broken. I mean, there was a whole litany of issues of breach of contract. And we said, absolutely not. Client got very angry. So the first thing I said is, aren't we so glad that when we priced this project, we included the pain in the ass tax? Because we just had a feeling that this client was a little bit outside of our niche, maybe a little bit of a reach, maybe a little bit of a not something we'd usually take, isn't a perfect fit, like perfect Cinderella shoe fit for our ideal client. But are we still intrigued, and are we willing to maybe flex our muscles in a new direction? Sure. Did we come to regret it? Maybe.
Oh,
but we learned a very expensive lesson. We learned that not paid on the job. And now we're learning that we need to trust our gut when we say we like working with this prototype of person. Stick to it. And that's the lesson that we learned. And that was worth it already, because that happens to so many creatives. And I think when it does happen to us, we feel like, oh, I'm just so shit at my job. And I just like, if I had done this differently, and if I'd done that differently, and like, where am I ever? Like, I had someone this last week say, I can't charge more than $800 for a logo because I don't know any clients that would pay that much.
Then you need to meet more people.
Precisely.
I can tell you right now that there will always be a more expensive option and always be a cheaper option. You get to decide which one you are going to be for your client and which one you are willing to show up as. Because if you're willing to show up as the cheaper option, you need to give less. And how good are you at giving less?
True, true, true. My goodness. No, it's so true, because it's like you do learn that the hard way. And you learn that the hard way of like when you do fall into that trap of all of a sudden, I don't feel that we're delivering our best quality product. It's like, okay, well, why? Like, how did we get ourselves here in the first place? Is it because we don't feel that we're being adequately compensated for the skills we're bringing to the table? Probably. Like, that's a big part of it. You know what I mean? Like, there's a misalignment. And a lot of it, especially I noticed with like fellow freelancers, is like a shyness to talk about money early on. And I'm very opposite of that, but it took me a long time to get there, to start talking numbers on the discovery call. Just go straight for it. Have a drop-down question somewhere in your contact form that talks about budget. The interesting way that we've done it now on our contact form is, what's your business annual revenue? Straight up.
Ooh.
Because that's going to tell me proportionately how much is the industry standard for your niche to invest in the branding effort that you're after. And what's your revenue now? And then it prompts me on the discovery call to say, what are you projected to make this next year? Because that tells me if they know their numbers or not.
Mm.
And if they don't know their numbers, they're not going to have a good time with what we're going to lay out.
So true. I actually have on my intake form, what is your ideal investment for this problem to be solved?
Also.
And then I have there, click here to see my prices. That is the only place that I've got my prices for bespoke design work on there. And if they click that little pop-up page comes up and says, these are the things I'm available for. These are the things I don't touch with a massive stick. And there'll be things like any project-based work under $2,000, anything that is just a logo. And I lay it out black and white. This is exactly what I do. And I give ballpark ideas of like, I'm available for branding projects with an average spend of $5,000 to $8,000 to be able to facilitate my best work. You want to actually put the price not on how fast you can do it, but how long you need to do your best work and the value that that brings to the client. That's got to be the thing.
Right. The value for the return on their investment, right? When we're talking about branding, we're talking about brand identity. I think people struggle with pricing it because you're never going to have an apples to apples comparison.
Absolutely not.
You're never going to be branded and then rebranded and not rebranded. You'll never be able to run both. So it kind of becomes this complicated way of like, you know, was it worth it to brand? You don't know, because you'll never live the other reality where you didn't. So if you're embarking on that, the way to kind of, for me, explain that to the client is like, the goal here is return on your investment, that you're going to spend this and you're going to have the branding, all the things that the light touches, we're going to get the branding on. It's going to have you more professional. You're going to attract higher quality clients. You're going to have a better experience. You're going to create that connection with your audience. Like, that's where you actually talk about the impact of branding. But at the end of the day, I find a lot of business owners really care of like, if I spend this hefty chunk of change, is it really going to benefit me? Am I going to see that as a return, right? Because that's business 101. So it's kind of having those harder conversations from the beginning, I find make it much easier to then open yourself up to working with that person longer, right? Because it's clarity is kind. And when you can be clear about expectations from the get-go, then you have a less rocky road ahead of you. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And this is where I really believe that as much as we like rag on relationship-based reality TV shows.
I love all of them. They're the smartest things you can watch on television, and I stand by that.
Because, yeah, we sit there and kind of go, oh, yeah, they're not compatible or everything like that. But have you ever stopped to think if you're compatible with the clients that you have on your client roster? And are they doing things that you wouldn't let a loved one or a partner do? Are they breaking boundaries? Are they going and doing the things that break trust. Your client relationships are exactly that. They are a relationship. You need to work on investing in them, and you need to find ways to get them to invest back in you, not just monetarily, but becoming the person that they come to when they have a problem is one of the most valuable things that you can do. Start planting that narrative of, if you need something solved, come to me, let me help you, because not only am I going to either find a way to, for me to personally solve the problem, but I will never leave you hanging. I will always be that person for you. And this is, you know, whether it be a romantic relationship or your best friend who, let's be honest, is a romantic relationship in another way, shape or form, but you're finding a way to keep that relationship with your client. But the biggest thing that I will say is just be wary when that relationship is being used as currency. So this is another thing that trips students and freelancers up in those first couple of years, because we want to be that for everyone. We want to be able to do that, but we're not putting a price on it that accesses and acknowledges the value that we're bringing to it. And then they start to say things like, but I paid your invoice, but I thought that we were friends. And it's like, well, you can be friends with your clients. And this has caught me up before. Absolutely. I think it's caught out most freelancers before. But when they start to use the relationship as currency, that's when you need to recognize that a boundary needs to be set for the first time or reset for a multiple times. And if that happens to you, if you have a job that someone starts to use relationship as currency, if you have a job that you underquoted, if you have a job that goes pear-shaped and the client fires you halfway through, if you have a job where you're working on it and you're not feeling like you're doing your best work, that has nothing to do with how good, talented, or valuable you are as a designer and as a human. It has nothing to do with it. If a client's business goes under, that doesn't mean that your branding is now worth zero.
Oh my gosh. Everybody that's a designer needs to rewind another 30 seconds and listen to that again. That's going to be my new mantra, because we do, and creatives, it's so easy to put yourself and put so much of yourself and your soul into your work that when something does go haywire, it does feel like an attack. It does feel like a personal, you know, like, oh, well, it wasn't good enough, or I didn't help them enough, or I didn't get them there enough. Like, it is that imposter syndrome in another sneaky way, that where we try to take all the blame for things not going well. And that cannot be the case. And especially in the world of business, it's, you're not making a family with these people. Like, you're helping them make money. Like, let's call it what it is, right? But I've fallen into that trap, absolutely. Especially when you love the client and you love the business that they're working on. You're like, well, I guess I could just skip dinner and finish this for them. Or I guess I'll just wake up really early tomorrow so that they can meet their deadline. And you're only hurting yourself.
Would they skip dinner to be able to get your copy?
Exactly. No.
Would they skip a family gathering so that they can make sure they fill out your brief properly?
No.
Are they going to make sure that they work until 2 a.m. so that you're able to do your job?
And even if they did, is that the life you want for yourself?
And is that a healthy relationship?
No, just because they're drinking that Kool-Aid, and this, we've quit clients over this.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I said, the beauty of working for myself is I don't have to work under these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got, your expectations are so outsized from your deliverables that I don't know how else to spell it out for you more clearly, but we cannot do what you're asking for without being fairly compensated. End of the line. And I'm sorry your business is opening. I'm sorry you have a seminar you need to go to, but there were stopgaps. There's a process in place. And at the end of the day, we're not betrothed to, and even in a romantic relationship, like if there is such a big miscommunication of the relationship, then you're kind of set up to not go in a good direction. It sounds so heady once we actually talk about pricing like this. Like, it sounds so much more like, wait, this is therapy now.
And that's where we have to recognize that not all currency is currency, and both in a give and receive form. So if we're having to sacrifice so much to be able to do the things that the client wants us to do, unless we've put a price tag on it that justifies that sacrifice, then there's a misalignment. And it's an opportunity for you to then go, I should have charged more, not because I worked longer hours. Like, it's not about that. It's about you're going to have to work so much harder to get that mental space back to be able to give it to the next client. And no one's paying that bill but you.
Yep. Until you have the balls to step up to the plate. You got the guts to say, no, I am worth this. And this is how.
And I feel like it's part of that comes into it. And I know that I am, and I won't even say guilty of it because it's just a human experience. But as a 34-year-old millennial Virgo recovering people pleaser, I can tell you right now that the people that you think that you're pleasing don't know that you're pleasing them.
Yeah.
Like, people pleasers, name three people that are pleased with you. Oh, that meme hit me right in the gut because I sat there and went, oh, I probably should be higher on my list of those to be pleased.
Yep. And the other one that I'll share with you, which might resonate, is the idea of perfectionism.
It's procrastination in another pair of pants.
That too. It's also the ability to spot errors quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to spin it to the positive, is like, I don't care that it's perfect. I can just see everything that's wrong with it right away.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I'm not expecting it to be without fault. But I'm telling you, when I see a design of mine that I did when I was too tired and I'm looking at it the next morning, I'm like, no, 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 no. Like, I can immediately put down the line of everything that's quote unquote, right, all things being subjective, wrong with it. We covered so much already and we really don't even have that much time left. But I'm wondering if you might be able to leave us with a little nugget or put us on a path of someone who's like, okay, I heard what you guys are saying. I need to redo all of my pricing and I don't even know where to start. Where someone's like, first step.
Know thy numbers. If you do not know your numbers, you're going to have a very, very hard time pricing yourself because you're going to be pricing on your gut. Your gut likes to think that you are freaking fast, and your gut likes to avoid confrontation. And the incorrect assumption we make is that the less we charge, the less likely we are to be having a confrontation. Not true.
It's always the opposite, isn't it? That's like Murphy's Law. It's like, if something can go wrong, it will. Is that Murphy's Law? But it's always the client that you charge the least amount of money for that's the biggest pain in the ass. And the client that you've charged the biggest invoice you've ever sent is like, looks great, approved. And you're like, you're joking.
Yeah.
You're joking. Wild how that happens.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is that knowing your numbers doesn't actually have to be something that you start looking at and then glaze over and go, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't do this. You can actually use something that I'm giving every single listener of the Kiss My Aesthetic podcast today. And it is something that I got super nerdy about over a weekend. I'm telling you, this had blood, sweat, tears, and like some pen ink that I just like wanted to throw at my computer to be able to code a custom pricing calculator for you. And so it is a literal online pricing calculator where you take the amount of profit that you want to make as a freelancer. You then also pick like how many hours, how many days a week that you want to be doing billable work, because there is a big difference between billable work and working hours. You then are able to go through all of the step-by-step processes of the things that you need to consider as expenses for running a profitable business. And when you get to the end of that and you've gone through, you know, Adobe software prices and how much I'm putting aside for my phone bill because it's a business expense, all of the things that are the expenses and the cost of doing business. And at the very end, it tells you exactly how much you need to be charging to be able to cover that. And that is something that I've got for every single listener today. So if you head to creativebusinesskitchen.com/KMA, that is sitting there ready and waiting for you to jump in, click on and access, and let that be the gateway for you to access how you can change your pricing. Because I have so many other opportunities for you to change the way that you think about pricing, from my online membership, which is called the Freelancer's Pantry, which has a free and a 2 paid tiers, that we do so many different things in there, and it is jam-packed with so many resources. And like, for example, and I'm segueing this really quickly, but this morning I had a breadbasket member inside my Freelancer's Pantry, which is the free tier, jump into the pricing pickle thread and say, hey, I've got this job. I'm wanting to be able to work out how to price it. They've got all these different things that they want. Do I do project? Do I do retainer? What do I do? That was at 8 a.m. this morning. I jumped in the chat, went back and forth with her. We talked about the different ways that we could transition them from, rather than doing project and taking on a lot of the risk, why don't we do a block of hours that transitions into retainers? And then I directed her to a section of the pantry that had a free retainer guide, and she was able to solve the problem, work out what she actually wanted to do, and hit send on the proposal for the client before 9 a.m., before I got on this call. That is the confidence that we are able to access if we just say, hey, I want to be more confident with my pricing. I want to be able to charge more, not by saying I'm just going to up my rates, but having the reasons why we are more valuable than we were yesterday.
And as your expertise grows, the access to your brain becomes more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
The access to your network becomes more expensive. So our selectiveness about the projects that we do take on is really just the tip of the iceberg. And there's still a way that if someone comes to you, you can help them, right? Like you just explained, you're like, I've got free tiers, I've got paid tiers, I've got opportunities, I've got downloads. Similar to us, even if we are not working with you for branding, I will talk to an ideal client on the phone. And after we've had the budget conversation, if it doesn't align, I'll say, hey, listen, I got this whole Facebook group. It's chock full of designers. We've got loads of people that would take your project at your budget, but our team will not be taking any projects at that budget. And it's such a great way to leave the call because ultimately the client is getting what they want. They're getting the project for the price point that they want and in a way that's going to serve them. Because if I take on that project and it doesn't fit our floor for what we charge, I'm doing them a disservice, right? Because I'm going to have to so far strip back the service that we provide to match the price point, or we're just not even going to be able to do it. Like I can't even keep the lights on for that price. So that being said, like go, please. Go get help. I'm happy to help shepherd you towards the opportunity to someone that can help you. And that's such a thing to keep in your back pocket is like knowing who you don't help, but still finding a way to get them what they need. I feel like that's really a distinct thing that the kind of new generation of business owners does particularly well, like you just explained yourself.
And what if that business goes away and they do the things that they're supposed to do and they grow and they build? And 5 years from now, they come back because they have earned the privilege to access your genius. They have worked damn hard to get to a point where they're financially able to afford the greatness that you could have done and given them 5 years earlier, but they couldn't afford it. They will find a way.
Exactly. And once you give them, I've had these conversations with really great clients as well. Like, we have a client that's so great and they want to work with us so bad. And I'm explaining to them like, hey, listen, like if you would like to work with us, here's your new target. Here's your new goalpost, right? So it's not that we're saying no, we're just saying not right now. So if you can go find the $10,000 that you want to pay us to do your branding, we're happy to meet you at that. You know what I mean? But it's sometimes it's just about having that transparent conversation. Like we're not breaking up with you. We're not saying no. We're just saying like, work on yourself. Come back. We'll be happy to entertain the conversation.
Yeah, go to therapy. Go to therapy, do some self-help, like do the things that you need to be able to do to qualify us to be able to do our best work. Like, do you need to go and work out who the hell your brand actually is? We can't create a brand for a non-existent customer, especially if you've got no idea who you serve or we're for everyone.
Yep. Kiss to death, isn't it?
Oh, it really is.
Oh my goodness. So much good stuff. We'll definitely have to have you back on the pod because I feel like this was really, really helpful. And I know you've got a whole bunch of practical pricing knowledge in there. But I think the biggest takeaways, if we could narrow it down, know your numbers. What else do we got?
We've got know that not all currency is currency.
Yes. We've got by pricing fairly to yourself, you're being kinder to yourself and you're working on things that are more aligned.
Mm-hmm.
Clarity is kindness. I think that's Renee Brown.
And making sure that the prices that you charge don't only just cover the project in front of you, but make it so that you can exist as a business to serve them later down the track when they actually can afford you.
So true. So important. Thank you so much for your time and all the way from Australia to California. I love these international conversations we get to have because of the podcast. Where can everyone find, follow you, connect with you, get their hands on that pricing calculator? I know you said it, but let's say it one more time, and maybe even work with you.
Absolutely. So if you are scrolling through Instagram and craving a little dose of pricing puns and food-based analogies to work out your pricing, head to Your Pricing Queen, that is moi, and I will happily serve that up on a silver platter. If you're hungry for more and you're wanting that pricing calculator, head to creativebusinesskitchen.com/KMA, or you can check out the pantry while you're there at creativebusinesskitchen.com/pantry.
It's crazy we didn't talk more about food puns, because listeners of the podcast know that I love a food pun. I didn't even go there. Maybe I'm just full from lunch. Sorry, I wasn't bringing up jokes.
Well, this is the great thing, is that we've left room for dessert, and let that be the second part of whatever you and I serve up next.
You're killing me. I love it. I love a pun. Us millennials, man. My little sisters make so much fun of me. Okay, I'll leave you with this funny story. So it was my dad's birthday last night, and I, as one does, was eating junk food. I ate one Thin Mint Girl Scout cookie. Do you guys have Girl Scout cookies in Australia, or is that an American thing?
It's an American thing.
Okay, chocolatey mint cookie. And then on the other hand, I ate like a spicy chili lime tortilla chip. And I looked at my sister. I was like, really? This is just a spicy chocolate mojito in my mouth. And she's like, you're insane. And I was like, it's what the thing is for.
Am I a genius? Damn it.
Exactly. I was like, watch out. I'll put it on Threads and people will go nuts. And she's like, you're so weird. She's Gen Z. She's like, you just think you're so funny with this like food. That's not even a pun. That's just like, you're just talking about flavor. And I was like, I know. And she's just was like, it was so over edge. She's just like cracking up laughing.
I mean, she ain't your target audience for that one.
No, she's not.
And that is so okay.
Exactly. So it's just so funny because like the food stuff makes sense in my brain. And I love that you're a butcher's daughter. That's just the most fun. So cool. Well, thanks everybody. Don't forget to follow Jazz. As always, please share this episode. If you learned something, if you have follow-up questions, hit us up in the DMs. And if you want a part two, definitely DM the both of us and let us know what your pricing questions are. Thanks so much.
Awesome.
We'll catch you later.
Peace out.
Bye. Thanks for joining us for the Kiss My Aesthetic podcast. Don't forget to follow along and leave us a review anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'll see you in the Kiss My Aesthetic Facebook group for years and years of behind-the-scenes content and over 5,000 connections with fellow creatives. For show notes from today's episode, please visit mkwcreative.co/podcast. This episode was edited by Berta Wired, and theme music comes from Eliza Vera and Nathan Menard. Catch you next time.